Morning, everyone. Welcome to the podcast service of the First Universalist Unitarian Church. It is Sunday, November 22nd, Sunday before Thanksgiving. Pleased to be joined this morning by Donica and Margaret and Julie, and we are all very excited to bring you a service this morning. I want to invite anyone who is a visitor listening for the first time this morning or joining us maybe for the second or third time and welcome you into this community. The community that you are listening to and a part of this morning has been in existence since 1870. For 150 years, we have served as a vital voice for liberal religion here in central Wisconsin. No matter what you're going through, no matter your income bracket, your sexual orientation, or gender expression, I hope that everyone knows that you are welcome here. There are no announcements that I can think of this morning, so with that, you're welcome to join me in reciting our chalice lighting. Otherwise, you can sit back and relax and listen to the rest of the service. But our chalice lighting goes, we light this chalice for the light of truth, the warmth of love, and the fire of commitment. We light this symbol of our faith as we gather together. Our opening hymn this morning is number 322 in our hymn book, Thanks Be for These, by Joyce and Richard Gilbert.
It's Julie here. I heard on the news that earlier this week, in the northernmost part of Alaska, the sun went down and won't come back up again for about 2 months. No sunrise, no sunset, no daylight for months. Hearing that made me really glad that even though our days are getting shorter, we still have several hours of sunlight here in central Wisconsin. Hearing that also reminded me of a story about the sun. And this story begins when winter was quickly coming, much like it is now, and the sun had grown very tired and very old. All year long, the sun had worked very hard, rising and setting day after day. All year long, the sun had fed everybody on Earth, shining and shining, giving energy to the trees and the flowers and the grasses so they could grow and feed the animals and birds and insects and people. All year, the sun's gravity held tight to the spinning ball of the earth and the twirling ball of the moon and the eight other twirling planets as they traveled around and around and around until the poor sun was dizzy watching all of it. Now the poor, tired sun could barely make it up in the morning, and after a very short time, needed to sleep again. So the great days grew shorter, and the nights grew longer, until the day was so short, it was hardly worth getting up for. Night noticed how tired the sun had become and wanted to help. "Come to my arms and rest, child," she said. "After all, I am your mother. You were born out of my darkness billions of years ago, and you will return to me when all things end. Let me cradle you now, as I shelter every galaxy and star in the universe." So night wrapped her great arms around the sun, and then the night was very long indeed. On Earth, children asked, "Why does the dark go on so long? Won't the sun ever come back?" The old wise ones told the children, "The sun is very tired. But maybe, if you children say thank you for all of the things the sun does for us, the light will return in the morning." The children sang songs to the sun. They thought about all the things the sun gave them. "Thank you for growing the lettuce and the corn and the rice and the wheat," they said. "Thank you for growing the trees of the forests and the seaweed in the ocean and the krill that feeds the whales. Thank you for stirring the air and making winds that bring the rain." Every time a child said thank you, the sun began to feel a little warmer, a little brighter. Wrapped safely in the arms of night, the sun grew younger and stronger. When it was time to go to bed each night, the children lit candles and put them in very safe places. And each flame was a little spark of the sun's fire. The sun peeped out from the arms of night and saw all the little fires and began to feel warmer and brighter and younger and stronger still. Early one morning, the old ones woke the children. Together, they climbed a high hill and faced the east, the direction of sunrise. They sang songs to the sun and ran around trying to keep warm. They waited and waited to see what dawn would bring. The sky began to turn from black to indigo to blue. Slowly, the sky grew light. A golden glow crept over the horizon. Night opened her great arms, and in a burst of brightness, the sun appeared, new and strong and shining. For in the long night, the sun had rested well and grown young from the songs and the thanks of the children, young as a brand new baby, born out of night once more. Everybody cheered, and the children jumped up and down. "The sun has returned. The sun is reborn," the people cried. And they danced and sang to celebrate the birth of a new day. We all get tired and need to rest like the sun. I noticed a couple of things from this story that might be helpful to some of us. The first thing I noticed is that the sun rested in the arms of night. Her mother, her creator. It doesn't say that they talked things through or did anything. Sun simply rested in night's arms. Where can you rest? Is it in the physical arms of someone who loves you? Is it in prayer? Or in music? Or nature? Is it in the embrace of God? I would encourage you to think about this week. We all need a place to rest. Another thing I noticed is that the gratitude of the children gave the son strength. I'm also noticing, as I go about my days, that there isn't a single person I come into contact with who couldn't use a little extra strength right now. So be generous with your gratitude this winter. Take some time this week to think about the people you are grateful for, and then don't keep it a secret. Write them a letter, call them, send a card. Your gratitude could make all the difference in someone's day. Now we'll sing our children's song.
Morning's reading is a poem entitled Perhaps the World Ends Here by Joey Harrow. And the poet writes, "The world begins at a kitchen table. No matter what, we must eat to live. The gifts of earth are brought and prepared, set on a table. So it has been since creation, and so it will go on. We chase chickens or dogs away from it. Babies teethe at the corners. They scrape their knees under it. It is here that children are given instruction on what it means to be human. We make men at it. We make women. At this table, we gossip, recall enemies, and the ghosts of lovers. Our dreams drink coffee with us as they put their arms around our children. They laugh with us at our poor, falling down selves, and as we put ourselves back together once again at the table. This table has been a house in the rain, an umbrella in the sun. Wars have begun and ended at this table. It is a place to hide in the shadow of terror, a place to celebrate the terrible victory. We have given birth on this table and have prepared our parents for burial here. At this table, we sing with joy, with sorrow, we pray of suffering and remorse, we give thanks. Perhaps the world will end at the kitchen table while we are laughing and crying, eating of the last sweet bite."
Are in the ocean deep and wide.
Living in Wausau provides many glimpses into nature's cycles. These days, the trees are nearly bare, and the clouds nudge out the sun more often. And up high, geese fly south, assuring that winter is near. A look at the calendar and a stroll through the stores do their best to remind us that we are supposed to be happy this time of year. And it is so easy to feel good this time of year. That is, unless you have little reason to feel good. Say you've had a tough year financially, or you've gotten laid off, or your college campus closed, and you had to attend on a computer screen that makes you look like a sibling in the Brady Bunch. Maybe your marriage is breaking apart, or you're anxious to see if Trump or Biden will end up president, or maybe you're spending the holidays like the medical experts are begging us to, forgoing fellowship with family and neighbors. When somber thoughts hit, and they do, and they will, it's easy to slip into despair. If you recall, the patron saint of Thanksgiving are those cheerful pilgrims who gave thanks to God even and especially when disaster struck. But if you're annoyed with Puritan optimism, you are in luck, as the pilgrims have come under scrutiny these days with many Americans wrestling with the nation's sinister chapters that show humanity's dark side, complete with colonization and disease and death. Native Americans resolved long ago to engage the public in that necessary yet uncomfortable process of re-examining America's creation myths. Some indigenous people believe that Thanksgiving should be made into a national day of mourning. But this morning's sermon won't linger on the pilgrims' Thanksgiving story, nor will it dive into the conversation about it becoming a day of mourning. And it most certainly will not take its lead from the Hallmark Channel Count Your Blessings version of Thanksgiving. Instead, what I want us to do is look forward to the day when Thanksgiving is liberated from all of this, so that finally people can give thanks to something other than ourselves or our success, and instead direct that thanks to something much greater, which, for lack of a better term, I call God. Thanks to the God whom the pilgrims adored and to whom the slaves of Africa praised as well. The God of St. Augustine, who loves us for our potential for joy and generosity in spite of our tragic sensibility and mastery of selfishness. The God of Martin Luther King, who beats back waves of opposition and brings low mountains of evil. Or Dorothy Day, who believed that God is most evident in the faces of the sick, hungry, and dying. Now, Thanksgiving isn't a religious holiday, though its familiar theme of gratitude is certainly a religious concern. But it occurs by accident on the eve of the Advent season of anticipation and the Christmas season of hope. Just as nature moves naturally from fall to summer, the church's calendar moves from life to death and back to life. And it's in this season of hope and possibility that churches pull out all the stops. They try to get your attention with hymns and carols, with endless candles and cookies, additional performances by the choir, and a few extra services in the hope that they can grab your attention away from the Packers game or the booze or your workout routine or your internet shopping or your depression or loneliness or broken marriage so you can hear this message. It's never too late to start again, to kindle within a flame of courage that says this book, the book of my life, isn't closed yet, that it's still being written, that there's still time to live and love in a way that is, in itself, evidence of our conviction that the life we have been given is a privilege. This season of Thanksgiving is, simply put, a season of remembrance. In St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians, he writes, "I do not stop giving thanks when I remember you in my prayers." In the Bible, the word remember occurs more than 8,500 times, more than almost any other phrase or word. Humankind is undeniably a remembering creature. The late Peter Gomes once told his congregation on the eve of Thanksgiving to first and foremost remember to remember. Gomes' advice runs counter to the Hallmark version of Thanksgiving. He says that as you gather around your table with your dysfunctional family and friends, you resist remembering all the good things in your life. Instead of asking everyone to share what they're thankful for, we dispense with the blessings and instead call to mind all the bad things, the terrible, awful things that make you cringe whenever they come to mind. And so you sit around that table and you bring into your mind your sorrows, losses, your sadness. And then when you're in tears or on the verge of them, you remember this, that you are here, alive, and able to remember them. And then bring into mind that you just got through what might have been a terrible, rotten year. And yes, there might be a bunch of crummy stuff to come, but you can save that for next Thanksgiving, because on this Thanksgiving, you are here. You survived that bad relationship. You managed to get past that tension with your children. You slogged through 10 months of a pandemic with all the fear, anxiety, and nasal swabs that came with it. You survived a tense election season. You paid way too many bills. You spent too much time doom-scrolling on Facebook and Twitter. You got ripped off by the mechanic. And then you got stuck in a checkout lane with one of those weirdos who wear their masks like a chin strap. And yet, my friends, you are here. Remember to remember. The second point I want to make this morning is that Thanksgiving isn't a day, it's a process. It's a work in progress, a way of life, and a journey. And every spiritual journey has a wilderness. The Israelites wandered 40 years. Siddhartha journeyed from royalty through suffering into enlightenment, and Jesus faced his worst temptations alone in a dark forest. What their stories show is that all of them, like us in our own ways, are on a journey. And what those stories and what our lives teach is that troubles come in bunches and mercies seldom happen all at once. But the point of it all, like the Buddha and Jesus and the Israelites, is that we must keep moving. In Elizabeth Tarbox's meditation, Gratitude Is Not Enough, she writes these words, "I refuse to lie down and be good. I will not heal up neatly, sutures in a row, no scars. No, I will not. I will shout out that I am here and hurting, and I will demand of life that it return my shout decibel for decibel. I will speak justice and kindness and beauty and truth, and I will try bravely, though I am a coward, and I will honor wisdom, though I am a fool." Thanksgiving isn't a day, it is a way of life. The African-American mystic Howard Thurman believed that Thanksgiving isn't some annual event with a mighty feast, but a daily litany, a religious undertaking, a sacrament, something as holy as a wedding or baptism, or as somber as a prayer spoken by the lips of the dying. For Thurman, true Thanksgiving begins when we acknowledge the very air we breathe, the cool water we drink, the taste of food, and the protection of clothes. He believed that we owe Thanksgiving for all the warmth we've ever known, the warmth of our mother's arms, our father's strength, all those childhood playmates, the stories you were told that filled your mind with magic and goblins and snow queens. Thanks for the tears we've shed and the tears you've seen others shed. Thanksgiving for laughter, for hope in times of peril, for a hand that reached out in darkness, for the whisper in your heart that spoke to you in a moment of temptation, the time when someone spoke a single sentence and so much hung in the balance. Thanksgiving for the generations who came before you, who without them your life would have no meaning. For the dreamers and the prophets, for the workers whose sweat has watered the earth, for the pilgrims who sailed to lands beyond the horizon, and to the survivors who sacrificed with blood. to give thanks for the chance to linger over life's meaning, for restless and sleepless nights, to heights beyond our reach but still worth stretching for hope that won't desert you, for the possibility that one day the children of our children will study war no more, that affection will cover us one day just as oceans cover the earth, and finally, thanksgiving for all the things we cannot think and feel, and for the humility to remember that thanksgiving isn't a day, but a way of life. At Thanksgiving, as we join hands and hearts with others around the table or on our phones and computers, take just a moment to feel the weight of the truth that every one of us is embarked on a shared destiny, a fact so evident in these pandemic days. As you go about your day, take a moment to give thanks for the bounty of this good earth, a bounty provided to us mainly by people we will never know, by a force beyond our knowing. In giving thanks, acknowledge that we are in this together. Thanksgiving is a festival of gratitude for the natural world that sustains us, for the people who love us, and for the causes that inspire us. Around whatever table you gather this Thanksgiving, my hope is that you will take in all this holiday has to offer and remember that true Thanksgiving isn't a day. It is a way of life. And now, I kindly ask that you join me in a spirit of prayer and for a time of silent meditation. If you are home sitting down, go ahead and close your eyes if you're so inclined, and take a breath. If you're out on a walk with the dog or on a run, stop for just a moment. And journey into silence with me with these words. Holy Spirit of life, we know that with the harvest comes the winter. We know how hard life can be when there is not enough to go around, when food runs out, when sickness lays us low, when violence threatens to take away every meager comfort and hope. We know of many who huddle outside the fold, longing for rest and healing, hungry for the nourishment that only love can bring. Holy God, holy mystery, you who will search out the little ones, make sure they have a place at the table. Help us to bring into our care those who have no comfort, no green pasture of safety, no nourishment in the presence of enemies. Great love, we lift our prayers for those in pain and need, for those we know and those we only know about, and also for ourselves. For we so often know just how it is to wake up lost and lonely. Now let us bring to mind the joys and concerns most present in our lives, and let us meditate on them in silence together now. Amen. Thank you. In our hymn book, Brandoc Lovely left us these words: "Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream." As all of you know, this church in all forms is made possible by the generous support of its friends and members. And so I ask that you kindly look into your heart and think about what you can give, and then do the hard part. Actually, go online, click the giving tab, and punch in your financial information. The offering will now be generously received and gratefully used to further our mission and vision. And now our doxology. May the truth that sets us free, and the hope that never dies, and the love that casts out fear lead us forward together until the day spring breaks and all shadows flee away.